It's a couple of minutes after 8 o'clock Wednesday morning. Welcome to the program. It's an absolutely beautiful day here in Laguna Beach. As we do each and every Wednesday, we are talking to Laureen Gilbert. She's the president and CEO of Wealthwise Financial Services. It's a Wealthwise moment. And she's the Forbes Best In-State Wealth Advisor, which is big stuff, man. Welcome to the program, Laureen. How are you this morning?
Thank you, Ed. Great to be here. Great to be in sunny Southern California.
It's great to have you here. I want to do this before we jump into where you were last week. The Best in State Wealth Advisor, the Forbes Best in State Wealth Advisor, that has a, I looked it up after you told us you were, that is a lot of criteria. That's big. And we're really now.
Oh, thank you.
Super honored to have you on the show.
It was an honor for me too. It was the first time we'd been ranked on that list, so that was exciting.
Oh, fantastic for you. And so last week you were in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't, in Dallas. You couldn't have picked a worse week to vacation in Texas, I'm telling you.
Well, I wasn't really vacationing per se. I was working, but it was crazy weather, Ed, and I was I have a condo there where I going up the elevator, and there was a power outage while I was in the elevator. So I got stuck between the 7th and the 8th floor of that elevator, and the firefighters had to come out and rescue me with a ladder climbing out of that elevator, both myself and my dog, Chobe. So thanks to those firefighters for rescuing me that evening.
Now, how long were you in the elevator before they arrived?
45 minutes, and that's only because they had called a technician, and I was waiting for 30 minutes, and I finally asked if they had called the fire department, and they said, no, but we can. I said, well, that would be great, because the weather was so horrific, you know, nobody was out on the roads trying to get a technician out, almost impossible.
Now, let me ask you this part about it. If during the entire storm or the time you were out there, did you have thoughts on the power grid? Were you angry at the fact that there's not a lot of regulation? And are you expecting maybe to receive large electric bills here in the coming month or two?
You know, I think that Texas needs to get to the bottom of exactly what happened, you know, with there's a lot of stories out there, and I think that people are taking political sides over an issue that just really needs to be figured out, right? So without getting into all of the politics about it, I would say that Texas is definitely in the spotlight of the entire country for where do we need reforms on energy to make sure that when people need it most, people get the energy that they need. Because I'll tell you, my mother, who's 85 years old, was out of power for 24 hours. And, that's just dangerous for the elderly, for everyone. So I would just certainly say that that we definitely need to get to the bottom of it and fix whatever structural systemic issues there are.
Right. And stepping aside from the political aspect of it, watching your friends in Texas and neighbors and whatever boil water for 5 or 6 days, mm-hmm. It's a little angry. And you think, you know what, this doesn't happen here in the United States, but it does.
We definitely need to figure it out because while that was somewhat of an anomaly, you know, once in 30 years that you see that kind of thing happen, it could be happening more going forward. So given that, we definitely need a solution to it.
Right. We had spoken about trying to find more information on a 2-week window. And I'd mentioned this on Monday here on the program, a 2-week window that the government's going to allow for businesses with less than 20 employees to apply for PPP before anyone else, giving them an opportunity to jump in on the PPP. And were you able to find anything?
Yeah, I was. Okay. So you're absolutely right that there's going to be this priority window allowing businesses with 20 or fewer employees to apply for loans, and that's beginning today.
Right.
And this priority period lasts for 14 days. In addition to that, there's quite a few other somewhat amendments and expansions on PPP. So They're expanding PPP eligibility to small business owners with non-fraud felony convictions. You'll remember before it was not allowed if you had a felony. And then in addition, expanding eligibility to non-citizen small business owners who are lawful U.S. residents, which is very interesting, Ed, because that means that our U.S. taxpayer money is now going to go to people who are no longer, who are not U.S. citizens. So I find that quite fascinating that's part of this revision as well.
Are these same people, maybe the guy with the food truck, are they paying taxes though? Do they pay taxes? And in their legal business? Yeah.
Yeah. And it says who are lawful U.S. residents. So that would certainly imply that they are filing tax returns, if they are lawful U.S. residents. The other thing I want to mention, there's a revised PPP loan calculation formula for entrepreneurs, independent contractors, and self-employed applicants to ensure they receive more relief and establish $1 billion set aside for businesses in this category without employees located in certain areas. So quite a few revisions. You know, I think we're just, I think the story with this is, and the same with the stimulus package, it's like, how can we, at this point in our recovery, really go help the people who need it the most?
Right.
Instead of just this blanket idea, how can we focus on either industries like restaurants, travel, leisure, those areas, and then, of course, the smallest business owners that many times were omitted from previous PPP.
Right. So I think,
or just not applying for it.
So I think the meat of what we're talking about right now is that here, especially here in town, here in Laguna Beach in particular, where there are so many businesses with less than 20 employees, they've got the 2-week window. That's pretty good. And it starts today.
That's what I'm seeing.
That's great.
That's what I'm seeing. And that, so people can go out there and get that PPP.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for checking on that, by the way. That was quick research. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. I appreciate that. So we've been talking the last couple of weeks about GameStop and the frenzy that happened with GameStop. Has that highlighted concerns? It has, no doubt. It's highlighted concerns about market structure. Has it done so enough to seriously consider imposing a financial transaction tax?
So those are two very different things. There's been talk about a financial transaction tax, and that would be very destructive for small investors.
Okay.
Of course, also for large investors too. But for all individual investors, it would be devastating to them, because you think about people at that lower end that are just trying to get into the markets and trying to learn about it. So it would deter people from investing. It would also deter listing of stocks on our exchanges, and instead it would favor stocks being listed on other exchanges with no transaction tax. And most recently, you had news that New Jersey was a state that was looking at it, so not at the federal level, but at the state level.
Right.
And the NASDAQ said that they would relocate out of New Jersey if that were to happen.
Wow.
So I think that there are, these are those unintended consequences. So instead of looking at a financial transaction tax, I don't think that really solves anything. I think it's more looking at to make sure that we continue to have a free market that we need, with enough regulations to stop bad actors.
Okay. And I'm curious, what would that tax be? Would it be like a dollar tax on every $1,000 transaction, something like that?
I don't remember what New Jersey's proposal was. It was a very small tax, and I don't recall exactly what it was.
Okay. All right. In January, and this is, I'm going to unfold this question, and it's a lot to take in. In January, we saw a jump in U.S. retail sales. right now we're about to stimulate the economy with $1.9 trillion. And I'm expecting, at least, if I'm not the only one, by mid to late summer, our impatient selves who can't wait to get out, we're going to be start racing to restaurants and going on vacation and spending money and causing inflation. And I'm guessing higher than the 2% long-term Federal Reserve has been targeting. So high debt levels and rising inflation, are we undermining the markets or forcing maybe the Fed to take to hike up interest rates?
It's a great question, Ed. Let me unpack quite a few things about what you just said. Let's start with the jump in retail sales. It was a fantastic number. Let's just go over what that was. So we are talking about January retail sales, and it's divided up into two categories, retail sales in general, and then retail sales ex automotive. And our prior reading in December was a negative 1%, and it jumped in January to 5.3 on retail sales. Ex auto, it prior reading was negative 1.8%, and the January reading was a positive 5.9%. On top of those numbers, the year-over-year increase on retail sales was increased 7.4%. That means January to 2020, from January 2020 to January 2021, a 7.4% increase. That, I mean, just think about that. That was pre-pandemic to post-pandemic, and still this huge jump in retail sales. So I just wanted to put that in because it was a huge increase. So, yes, we've had this huge increase in retail sales, saying the retail consumer has been strong and has been spending. On top of that, like you said, an additional $1.9 trillion of stimulus. Now, let's put that into context on stimulus. So we've had other stimulus money coming into the system. And now we're talking about another 1.9. When we look at what we're talking about in the money supply, we've had an increase in money supply of 25% in 2020. A 25% increase in money supply in 2020. That's a huge amount of money.
Yes.
Now, on top of that, you know, we just heard from Powell, and you were mentioning the Fed. Let's not forget that the Fed is purchasing $120 billion a month in security. So Treasury, let's just break that down. That $120 billion includes $80 billion a month in Treasuries, $40 billion a month in agency MBS. So a total of $120 billion a month. It's just, it's staggering.
That is
so staggering. With all of that money, stimulus, so the stimulus, which is, of course, your fiscal stimulus, and the monetary, which is the Fed putting money in the system, you got a lot of money out there. So with that, to your point, we're starting to see things happen on rates somewhat going up without the Federal Reserve changing anything per se, right? It's kind of this natural flow up and inflation starting to increase. Now, there's a concern. If you listen to the Fed is not concerned about inflation. Why? We've been working for 14 years to try and get our inflation number at 2%, and it hasn't happened in 14 years. So I think somewhat there's an over concern about inflation.
Okay.
We need some healthy inflation. What the Fed has said is, look, before we had this, you know, target of 2%, we haven't been able to get there. So let's look for an average of 2%. It's okay to go higher than that. So I think that that's fine. I think what investors need to think about in all of this, there's a few things to think about as an investor. One, the tailwinds are there for the equity market when you have continued stimulus. If there's another stimulus package, which I fully expect there will be, that is a tailwind for equity markets, at least in the short term. But I think what you're pointing out is longer term, as inflation goes up, rates go up, at what point is it no longer healthy for the stock market? And I would say we have a ways to go with that. I don't think that we need to be overly concerned about that today. Of course, there will become a time when we actually have to pay for all this money in the money supply, and that equities will at some point roll over. And what you're seeing right now in the equity market, Ed, is a rotation from your high-flying growth stocks that did so well over the last year towards the value side of the equation. And you'll remember, I've been talking about this. I've been telling investors that there was this rotation that was coming. Well, the rotation's here. We are here now. What we're seeing move forward are the areas of the market that were in malaise before, and what's now in malaise are the areas that did so well last year. So your stay-at-home stocks and growth is now shifting towards the value side of the equation.
Thank you. Perfectly and clearly unpacked. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's talk about the international investment market for a moment.
Sure. So international investing has been kind of a back burner for many people, as our U.S. markets have done so well. Right. But what people may not realize, and what investors need to think about, is that we're in this long-term dollar decline. And in a long-term dollar decline, it makes international investing even more attractive. Plus, if you look at valuation, compare our stock market in the United States compared to valuations either in developed markets or emerging markets, and there is a valuation story as well. So both from a currency perspective and a valuation perspective, the fact that we've got a long-term weakening dollar, investors need to think about increasing their international exposure for the long haul, where investors may have only had 10 to 20% invested internationally. I would say investors need to think about a larger percentage. And of course, it depends on your risk tolerance. There's a lot of things to be thinking about, but certainly more like a 20 to 35% international exposure would be something for investors to look at.
Okay. Okay. And do the same rules apply that would apply here? I noticed you wrote an article called The Markets. It's a contrarian's dream come true. I'd love for you to unfold that for us a little bit. Would that apply on the international level?
Sure, absolutely. And let me also just point out, there's one other thing I just wanted to say about international investing, is that if you think about it, it's kind of ironic that politically, we've moved from kind of this nationalism stance to more of a globalism stance. Right. And at the same time, the trade needs to follow as well, from more of a domestic trade to an international trade. So just something too for investors to think about.
Right, because it is one global community.
Yeah, it is. And from an investment perspective, so many people really haven't thought about that. Right. They've just been so focused on domestic investing.
Okay.
Right. So finally, to your point about looking at it, really that story is all about that right now, when you look at asset management and asset managers, cash is at the lowest level since March 2013. And with that, respondents are saying that they're taking a higher than normal level of risk. And why is that? When you look at what's behind that, it all has to do with some of the things that we've been talking about. So interest rates are still very low. Government stimulus is flooding the market with cash. We talked about that. And economic recovery is gaining steam. So when we look at that, you know, and I've been saying for a long time, hey, we're in recovery. All the numbers, you know, these numbers are showing that we're truly in recovery. And so with that recovery, with stimulus, and with still very low interest rates, even though we're seeing some tick up in rates, that is a positive environment for the market, which also means at some point, you know, we're probably going to have a correction too. With this much money, you know, kind of clamoring for the markets, we never know what, Ed, is going to cause the next correction in the markets. And by the way, you know, healthy corrections in the markets. So I'd say to investors not to be fearful when and if we have a correction, but to use that as a buying opportunity to get more cash into the market.
Okay. All right. And I'll leave you with this. We had been talking for months and months and months about how great Tesla was doing. I noticed recently their stock is tumbling. Why is that?
Well, it kind of goes with that same trade that I was talking about, that there's this big movement from growth and technology companies into value.
Okay.
And there's been this serious money flow out of those names that were doing so well into names that had not done so well. So Tesla falls into that category. And the other thing you'll note is that as rates go up, it changes the valuation of companies. So when you're looking at valuing a company, you have to use a discounted cash flow method to figure out what your valuation is. But when rates go up, it increases the discount, which means that now companies aren't worth as much.
Okay.
When rates are lower, you know, then it increases the valuation. As rates go up, it actually decreases the valuation. So that's part of it, too. And of course, you know, there's not even a metric for valuing Tesla at those levels. So, you know, it's just looking way out into the future as far as their earnings and revenue potential.
Okay. Providing clarity every Wednesday morning, the Forbes Best in State Wealth Advisor from Wealthwise Financial Services. Laureen, how do we get in touch with you?
WealthwiseFinancial.com or 949-748-1177.
As always, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Ed. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Laureen. 8:24 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show.